Somewhere in the bowels of the city that never sleeps.
Kevin McCullough, radio host with Salem Media.
Is a man also not sleeping.
Syndicated radio talk show host Kevin McCullough.
And that guy would like a word with you.
Many of you know him from as Nostradamus.
Of course that Kevin show is going to be great.
The only thing that could be greater, of course, would be
that Donald show.
But we don't have that, so we have that Kevin show.
Featuring the music of Dick Tunney and the Dream in Color Orchestra. And still to come tonight on That Kevin Show, she will describe the perfect New York date, and it involves pizza and a Subway. Comedian Erica Rhodes. He's a master thespian of stage and screen, but don't you call him that. Max McLean. And in the spotlight, Lauren Daigle returns this hour. And now, live from Times Square, where the Brooklyn Deli still refuses to serve the 15-bite hot dog. Here's That Kevin.
And that's so incredibly sad. The Brooklyn Deli, for those of you uninitiated with Times Square, the Brooklyn Deli is the newest eatery in the portfolio. Well, I think it's the second newest eatery in the portfolio of one Shelley Fireman, the Fireman Hospitality Group. Incredible restaurateur here in the city. If you come, you got to try more than one of their places. You'll get a great steak at the Red Eye Grill. But the Brooklyn Deli is like the little ugly step cousin of the big brother, the Brooklyn Diner. Now, there's nothing ugly about the Brooklyn Deli. It's just a smaller place, and they don't have the full menu. And if you go to the Brooklyn Diner, which is not in Brooklyn, it's in Manhattan. But if you go to the Brooklyn Diner, on the menu, there is a 15-bite hot dog. And when people come, I take them, and they're like, I can't believe it's going to be 15 bites. Yeah, believe me. Trust me. But Shelley hasn't put it in the deli yet. So, Shelley Fireman, from your friend, Kevin McCullough, can you put two things in the Brooklyn Deli? Can you put the 15-bite hot dog, and could you sneak over some of that pizza from your other place, Bond 45, there in the Brooklyn Deli? I'd be so grateful. Very, very appreciative. Anyway, welcome to Hour 2. It's That Kevin Show. Time to get into some headlines. And it's really funny when the news media tried to gin up something and make more of it than what it is. Take a look at this headline. You notice the breaking news title across the front, and there's a very worried look by 45. Very concerned, very worried. I don't know when that was taken. It wasn't taken today. They're trying to make it look like he just got the news, and all of a sudden, well, he's taken totally by surprise. That's not what happened here. Now, Donald Trump, in one of the worst kept secrets in the modern era, will likely be indicted this next week by the Alvin Bragg joke of a DA here in Manhattan. Now, it's sad to say that the district attorney in Manhattan is, in fact, a joke. But this is a guy who, on the first day of his job, he came in, and as his only job is to prosecute the criminals that get arrested and are brought before the state for trial. That's his only job, to prosecute the criminals. He comes in on the first day of the new job and posts a list of all the criminals that he's not going to prosecute. Now, just imagine for a second, if you were a stock boy at a grocery store and you came in the day after getting the job, on your first day, you came in and said, you know what? I'm not stocking rows 1 through 5. I'll stock everything else, but 1 through 5, nah, not me, pal. Forget it. Nope, I'm out. How long do you think you'd have that job? Exactly. So the fact that Alvin Bragg even still has a job is pretty incredible, but he's wholly owned and operated by George Soros. Like, literally, there's a puppet slit in the back of Alvin Bragg's back, and you can sometimes see the hand operating the controls when he's talking and so forth. Anyway, so big, and the former president is correct. These particular charges, because they couldn't do anything on the insurrection. They couldn't do anything on anything else. So they're going to try to stick him with the Stormy Daniels crime, which I still have yet to see what the crime was. Billionaires pay nuisance fees to people to get them to go away all the time. He's not admitted anything, but that's not stopping the news media from printing it the way they want to. Anyway, so that's coming up. Now, what is kind of interesting, and I did not know about this story. Evidently, there are some rural towns in, where was this, Michigan, that don't particularly want the Chinese Communist Party to move into their town and build big factories. And they had about 100 people show up at a town hall, which where these towns are at, that's like, that's a lot. That's like, you know, most of the voter base. And they're upset because the Chinese have decided they're going to build battery manufacturing plants in two towns in rural Michigan. And so the townspeople said, nope, I don't think so. We don't want that. And they were very clear. It's going to be funny to see how the media reports this. They were very clear to say, we're not against the Chinese people, but every company in China is owned by the government. It's the Chinese Communist Party, and they're going to spy on us when they get here. I'll guarantee you TikTok is not a very big deal in these towns in rural Michigan. So they've had enough. They're saying, no, why invite the enemy to come be in our state, in our backyard, in our homes? Nope, we're not going for it. Forget that. We're done. We're out. No. This last story that I want to touch on, the headlines, man. So the Navy, whose job it is to build boats, sail those boats, use those boats sometimes to fly planes off of and to take our soldiers to where they need to go to fight wars. The Secretary of the Navy said this week that his number one focus is going to be climate change. Climate change. I thought that as Secretary of the Navy, there might be a few more things involved. Also, President Biden thinks it's a good idea for us to not have as many ships as we have in the water right now. So his budget for this coming year is going to be proposed to eliminate two ships. We have like 300. He wants to go down to 298. Currently, the Chinese are very close to us in the size of their Navy, but they're about to surpass us because they're building ships at a faster rate than we are. So he's basically ceding mastery of the seas over to the Chinese in plain sight, right in front of us, where we can see it happening. And he put a guy in charge of the Navy secretary, that is not only saying that climate change is going to be his priority. This last week, he spent time in the Bahamas with the Bahamian prime minister discussing all the ways that our countries could work together to affect climate change. And this was on days after a trip, just on the heels of a trip that John Kerry, hello, I'm John Kerry, that just on the heels of him being there, said that we needed to all be working more on climate change with our Navy. What? How does the Navy figure into the climate? We're already using nuclear subs. A lot of our warships are nuclear powered. They'll never run out of energy because they reconstitute the energy because it's a little nuclear reactor in there and it's keeping them going. We're not using lots of oil to power our ships. So what do you want us to do more? We're not burning up energy. We're using an energy that self-renews. I don't get it. I don't get where it's at. But that's the number one concern of the new Navy. Fewer boats and make climate change the number one priority. Okay, I guess. Don't get me started. All right, lastly, I just want to bring this up because next week we've got a very special broadcast planned for you. And it's going to be very different than what we normally do. We normally try to have a lot of fun. There are more people in human slavery right now on planet Earth than ever before, more than 50 million. And we're going to try to raise a little bit of awareness about that. Will you help us? You can liberate a human slave today if you go to bringherhome.org or dial 888-342-1010. My friends at Christian Solidarity International are, again, helping us to help them liberate human slaves out of sexual trafficking, labor injustice, and a ton of other stuff. And we've got a special broadcast on that coming up next week. I'm Kevin McCullough. Stay with us. We're live from New York. My next guest is no stranger if you've been around the performing arts community in New York City, where he's oftentimes portrayed on stage different characters of some of the key writings of the subject of his most recent film. But that film is coming to on demand through our friends at PureFlix, and we're very excited about that possibility. And ladies and gentlemen, I'd love you to put your hands together for Max McClain. Hello, Max.
Thank you, Kevin. Good to be with you.
It's great to be with you. I love the portrayal of C.S. Lewis in his Untold Story. Talk to me about how it came about.
Well, it was born, actually, out of the pandemic. We had talked about making, had a stage play called The Most Reluctant Convert that started in 2016 and toured. It ran for 15 weeks in New York.
Right.
And then it toured the country. And we talked about making a movie of it. But we thought that was going to be 2 or 3 years down the road. And then in March of 2020, of course, all theaters were shut down, 15 days to flatten the curve. Remember that?
Yep.
Yeah. When I thought, what am I going to do for the next 2 weeks?
Turned into 2 years to get out of your apartment.
Exactly. And so, but in the meantime, we started working more on the script, and then our director was Norman Stone, and he said, Britain is opening up for filmmaking, and nobody's worked, has been working since March, so they're going to open up in August, and if we can get our act together, I can get a really good crew and cast at a very good rates because nobody's worked. And I said, well, if you can confirm that and get the locations we need, I'll go to my board and see if we can get the funding to get the film in the can, and we'll worry about post-production and distribution later. And so, I went to England on a plane as big as Air Force One with fewer people on it, quarantined for 2 weeks, began shooting in mid-September, finished by mid-October. And as soon as we were done, they shut down for filmmaking because there was another variant that came right. And everything shut down. So that was a real providential blessing there. And then that was in October 20. And then the event cinema release we did was in November of 21. And it was only supposed to be a one-day event, and it became it stayed in theaters for 4 weeks.
Yeah.
And now, it's done very well. It was the number two movie in America the night it opened. And did very, very well in the cinemas. And then we've done really well in Amazon, and now really glad PureFlix is picking it up.
Yeah. No, it's remarkable. And I don't think that I've had a chance to ever ask you about this directly, but C.S. Lewis, obviously a huge influence on your work. And I'm curious what you most appreciate about the life of this very well-known writer. And the impact he left on the world.
Yeah. He read everything from the Greeks to the moderns. He had a steel trap mind that could remember everything he read. And then he had this unusual ability to translate it into magnificent prose and speech.
Hmm.
I mean, at the highest levels, I think he's one of the great writers of all time, certainly in the English language. And then, of course, for the Christian, he did it all under the headship of Jesus. And so for us, you know, literary types, sometimes academic types, we want a connection between the heart and the head. And that's Lewis, it seems to be our go-to guy for that.
Yeah.
And
he wrestled, really it was a wrestling match for him, because obviously, as your film portrays, he didn't walk, you know, the unquestioned upright story the whole time. I mean, there was some real doubt and real heartache that he wrestled with.
Right. And of course, what I'm referencing is after the fact. Yeah. The film actually portrays that, you know, he came to the conclusion, you know, based on the fact he lost his mother to cancer mm-hmm. at 9 years old. He had a very strained relationship with his father that he regretted all his life, that he never repaired that. He experienced the butchery of trench warfare
mm-hmm.
in World War I. And he came to the conclusion, as a result of all that, that either there's no God behind the universe, a God who's indifferent to good and evil, or worse, an evil God.
Hmm.
Someone asked him when he went back to Oxford after the war, he said, were you much frightened in France in the trenches? He said, all the time. But I never sank so low as to pray. I mean, that's, you know, he was pretty far down, you know, in terms of where he was. And on the basis of his relationships with people like J.R.R. Tolkien and Owen Barfield, you know, he said his argument against God was that the universe was so cruel and unjust. But where had he got this notion of cruel and unjust? He says he calls a line crooked because he has some idea of a straight line. Well, what was he comparing this universe with when he called it cruel and unjust? And that was the beginning point, because he was so
right.
He was so logical and so clear in his thinking that he had to come to terms with that.
Real quickly, I've heard different stories about he and Tolkien's relationship, and I'm just curious, from where you sit, what do you think was the most significant aspect of those two literary giants in their relationship?
Well, there's a lot. One is Lewis, his conversion to Christianity was based on his relationship with Tolkien. And it was an unusual conversion because he'd already become a theist in the sense that he believed in one supreme God, but he had no place for Jesus. He says the God whom he knew nothing of the incarnation, the God to whom he surrendered was not human. He just couldn't understand how the life and death of someone else 2000 years ago could be of any significance here and now.
Yeah.
And he said it wasn't until his friend Professor Tolkien showed him that you know, they were both medievalists, and he said that that showed him that all this vague in the pagan religions there's this vague notion of a god who's killed, broken, come to life again. Balder, Osiris, Dionysus, Adonis, all the myths. He says, but then among these Jews, this thing really happened. The myth became fact. And the fact that he said that when he read the mythological stories, he was really moved by them. But when he read the gospel, he wasn't, because he looked at the gospel different. He looked at it as precepts or something, you know, that some sort of political association perhaps, but he didn't get into the real power of the story of who Jesus is. And so that caused him to read the gospel differently.
Sure.
And he came to terms with Jesus as a result of that. So that was number one. And number two, they both would not have written their greatest works without the influence and encouragement of each other.
Okay, hold that thought. We're going to come back. My very special guest is Max McLean here on this edition of That Kevin Show. Stay here.
Ready or not, you'll be right back. That Kevin Show with Kevin McCullough. is from New York, that Kevin, Kevin McCullough.
All right, just a few more minutes with Max McLean. The Untold Story of C.S. Lewis, his most recent film, is now available on demand at PureFlix, also available at Amazon, and has already made its presence known in theaters a little more than a year ago. And if you have not seen this film yet, friends, it is just splendid. It is beautifully shot. The cinematography is off the charts, but so is the acting. And the cast is wonderful. Max, you guys just really nailed every aspect of this film, and congratulations are due. Down to the soundtrack, like there's just everything that I love about movies, I loved about this film. Real quickly, what do you think is the most misunderstood aspect of C.S. Lewis?
Well, I'm a hard person to ask that, answer that to. I don't know the answer to that question in terms of misunderstanding. I just know that that whenever I read him, he wakes up a certain dormant part of my brain.
Wow.
And because of that, I'm just really thankful.
Well, you've spent a good number of years interpreting his works and his life, and we are grateful for that on stage and on film. What's next for Max McLean? What are you working on?
Well, right now I'm, the movie was based on a play, The Most Reluctant Convert, which went up to his conversion to Christianity. But, you know, a lot of people get converted, Kevin, and they don't become C.S. Lewis. So what was unique, you know, what was unique about his conversion that made him such an extraordinary?
So might there be a sequel? Is this what you're hinting at?
Yeah, well, what it is that there's already a sequel to the play. I'm touring that now called Further Up, Further In, that is getting huge audiences as well as extraordinary emotional responses, which I've been so blessed by. And then, of course, we are going to go back and make a couple of films down the road that, in fact, I think we'll be making them within the next year.
Wonderful. Is Further Up, Further In one of those?
Well, Further Up, Further In is really meant for the stage. And so it will certainly influence, but it won't be. The next two films are going to be much more biographical in the sense that, you know, he didn't write a memoir about his later life. So you're going to have to use secondary sources with relationships with Tolkien, his longstanding relationship with this Janie Moore, how the BBC decided to how they discovered him, how listening to Hitler's speech during World War II influenced his writing of the Screwtape Letters. Mm-hmm. These are some of the things that will be discussed in the film. And we're very, very excited about getting back on and doing the two films. Norman Stone has signed up to direct both of those films.
Great. That's phenomenal. It means you get the same kind of magic back together again.
Yes. Yes.
Max McLean, thanks for being with us. Friends, before we go to this next break, I want you to take a look. This is the trailer to C.S. Lewis, The Untold Convert
Most Reluctant Convert.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the trailer to The Most Reluctant Convert, C.S. Lewis, Max McLean in the lead as Clive Staples himself. Take a look.
I never cared for my name, Clive Staples. The world came to know me as C.S. Lewis. Perhaps you've read my books. The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe is the most famous, but there's one story that's not so well known. It's my story. And who better to tell it than me? Cheers.
Hey, Jack, now stop. Don't disturb your father.
Oh. Boys!
Your mother loves you very much.
At 14, I ceased to be a Christian. She was the first woman to speak to my blood.
I love the smell of bunting.
And I was undone.
Have you nothing to say in your defense?
William Kirkpatrick, the great knock.
Either there's no God behind the universe, a God indifferent to good and evil, or worse, an evil God.
Do you believe that logic and reason bring forth indisputable truth?
I do.
And are your moral and aesthetic judgments valid and meaningful?
They are.
For the first time, I examined myself with a serious, practical purpose. What I found appalled me.
How could a mere man be called a great moral teacher and say the sort of things Jesus said?
Such as?
That night, as I read Fantastes, my imagination was baptized. The rest of me took a little longer.
Ready or not, he'll be right back. That Kevin Show with Kevin McCullough. Now, back to That Kevin Show with Kevin McCullough.
And straight away we go to the Dry Bar Comedy Stage. Here's Erica Rhodes.
What I found the most surprising about the whole movement was how surprised we were by men being gross. Like, that's one of the first things I learned as a child. My mom was like, eat your broccoli, men are gross. And then suddenly this year we all woke up and every morning it was like, did you hear? Did you hear another man was gross again? And I'm like, I thought we knew that. And then another day goes by and you're like, did you hear another one? Another one was gross. I'm like, I'm not shocked. I thought we knew this already. And the men are like, yeah, we know. We know. I don't think that all men are bad or anything. I just think that maybe they're slow learners. Right? We just need to give them a little time to catch up. And if they're over like 80, just let them die a creep. You know? Give them those last couple years. You don't need to teach an 80-year-old man why it's demeaning to call a woman sweetheart, you know? He's only got a little time left. Guys, you're like, was that political? We don't know. We're confused. I've been traveling a lot, which is, it's good to get out of L.A., you know? It's nice. He's like, I got out and I stayed out. It's you know, it's a weird place, L.A. I anytime you can get out and just remember what real people are like, that's comforting. And I don't always get a lot of time in places, but I do meet a lot of Lyft drivers, you know, because I take a lot of lifts. And you can tell a lot about a place just by the Lyft drivers, you know. So I was in Minnesota recently, and they are so nice there. My Lyft driver was such a sweetheart. She was like, oh my gosh, you're a comic? Oh, wow, that's so brave. I could never be a comic. Your mother must be so proud of you. And I was like, thank you. And then I get back to LA, and my driver's like, oh, you're a comic? Yeah, me too. Yeah, I'm also an actress / producer / massage therapist / blogger / vlogger / marine biologist. I don't really need this job. I'm just doing it to study people. It's like, maybe you should study the art of silence. Then I was in New York. I love New York. Have you guys been to New York recently? Or yeah. It's great, because what I love about New York is that people just stare at each other. You know, like, there's like a lot of eye contact. You guys are doing great with eye contact right now. And I miss eye contact, because in LA everybody's on their phones or in their cars and nobody like looks at each other, you know? And in New York there's this beautiful moment on the subway when everybody loses cell phone reception, you know? And you just sort of pick a partner sitting across from you and you just stare at that person for like 15 stops until someone gets off the train. And it's just this magical moment. and I went to this little pizza place in the West Village. And the other thing I love about New York is everything's so small, you know? So, like, if you touch shoulders with somebody, nobody, like, pulls away. You're just like, oh, I guess we're cuddling now. You know, it's just like, you know, you just feel like you're part of something. So I went to this pizza place, and I sat down, and there were only about four chairs total. And there was only one empty seat, and it was right in front of me. And this guy just sat down in the empty seat in front of me, and we just ate our pizza in total silence, just staring into each other's eyes for like 15 minutes, just looking at each other, eating our pizza until we finished our pizza. Then we both got up, walked over to the trash can, threw away our paper plates, walked our separate directions without ever saying a word. And I was like, that was the best date I've been on. 10 years. It's like nobody said anything stupid. It lasted the perfect length of time, and we never have to see each other again. And I was like, that's love, you know? That's the kind of love I want. I did go through a breakup a couple months ago, which I thought was good because it meant it was a real relationship, finally. Right? Usually I'm like, it's over. And he's like, who's this? I don't know. I don't know this number. I wish we could bring breakups back from before the internet, right? It was easier. We could just be like, listen, I'm sorry it didn't work out. Have a nice life. Go away. Right? Simple. Now it's like, sorry it didn't work out. I will see you online forever. Or if it was a messy breakup, you could be like, I'm going to block your phone number, and they'd be gone, right? One thing. Now it's like, I'm going to block your phone number, then I'm going to defriend you on Facebook, unfollow you on Twitter, take you off my Instagram, do whatever it is to get rid of the Snapchat, and get my mom to do the same thing. There are so many clues he wasn't the right person for me. I feel like there's usually clues, right, that we ignore for 4 to 5 years. One clue is we had very little in common, except we both really loved him. Sounds crazy. He actually said these words to me once. He was like, I love you more than you love me. Because I love myself so much. You need to love yourself more so that you can love me more. And I was like, actually, I think we both need to love you less. Because the more I love you, the more I hate myself for loving a guy who loves himself so much.
That's Erica Rhodes, and she's going to be in New York Thursday through Sunday at the Midnight Theater starting March 30th. Maybe you can check her out. Kevin McCullough coming right back.
Ready or not, he'll be right back. That Kevin. Serving it up with a no-drink minimum. It's That Kevin Show.
Her brand new album is just out as of yesterday. Ladies and gentlemen, back to the music stage. Once again, Lauren Daigle.
Hold on to me when it's too dark.
All right, not her latest single. And her full album is not out yet. I misspoke when I introduced Lauren here in the final segment. It's just her new single, Thank God I Do, is the name of that. And we featured that in hour one. If you missed any of the Music Spotlight, go to Apple Music or Spotify and just search hashtag New Music Spotlight. You can get the entire year's list for free. Just sign up for the playlist, and it's automatically delivered to your playlist every time we add the new artist. Thank you to everybody who made tonight so special. We'll see you again next week on That Kevin Show.